There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hey, everybody, we're back with another episode of Cutting the Distance podcast. I'm Dirk Durham, and we have a special guest today. I know I kind of admit sometimes, I think every time I say we have a special guest today, but really today is a very special guest, my good friend and videographer, personal videographer, Dusty Roop.
Hello. Nice to be here with you, Dirk.
Yeah, yeah. Dusty lives in the same town as me, kind of, pretty much.
Yep.
We're probably 15 minutes away from each other.
Yeah.
And we get together a few times besides elk season. We do some podcasts. Sometimes we do just some, you know, other cool video stuff.
Yeah.
Today, I thought it would be great to bring Dusty on here. And talk to you guys about our film that just launched. And I want to back up just a little bit, just before we get too far. I'm kind of putting the cart before the horse. If you guys don't know who Dusty is, if you didn't listen to our previous podcasts, there was we did them last summer about filming. Yeah. You know, it was about cinematography and what it takes to get into it, what it takes to get the job done, what makes good films, what doesn't make good films. You want to look that back up. It's a few episodes ago. I can't remember what the number was.
I think it might be 50.
Oh, wow.
Not that I'm paying attention or anything.
you pulled that out of your sleeve like Ron Burgundy pulled a flute out of his sleeve. Well played.
Thank you.
Well played. You probably have the link handwritten on your hand, too, if you want to. Okay, /// HTTPS.
colon,
semicolon.
Exclamation point. Yeah.
Anyhow, Dusty, for the last few years, has followed me around during elk season, filming me, making me look good. As good as I can look. I mean, I think it looks good, but you know, other people probably think it's kind of mediocre. But anyhow, all kidding aside, Dusty has a great eye for film, and he's got a really good demeanor and personality to go film elk hunting and any other kind of hunting trips. He's one of those guys that just, he doesn't complain. We are out there in some really awkward, difficult situations in the woods where some people might want to say, screw this, we're going home. And I look at Dusty, I'm like, oh, how's it going? And he's just like, I'm good. Yeah. You know, no matter how much he's dying inside, he hides it well. And then when I do my, I call it my trailer park cuisine, I make gourmet meals out of very common everyday food that, you know, not a lot of people may think is good, but Dusty always compliments me about my cuisine, you know. So he's not a picky eater. He will drink a cold beer from time to time with me, which is nice. If, and he said he's not scared of bears, and I have not seen him be scared of anything yet. So that's good. That's really good. Anyway, he owns and operates Depth of Field.
Productions.
Yeah. Owner, operator, head bottle washer, you name
right.
it. Yeah. You do it all. Dusty, you know, he's edited quite a few films for us in the past. The last few I've got to do that. But he's very talented, big help. Anyway, thank you, Dusty, for coming on today. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Dirk.
So I mentioned earlier we had a film come out just recently on the Phelps Game Calls YouTube channel, and it's called Ghost Bulls of the North. And we didn't really designate the state, what state it is. I guess it's probably one of those things, if you know, you know, and if you don't, you'll probably figure it out one way or another. But anyway, we're hunting in some northern boreal forests, if you will, and they're very thick, they're very lush, lots of timber, lots of brush. The film is about an elk hunt. This was in 2022, right? It wasn't 2023. So in 2022, we went elk hunting in this place. And, you know, I think we had probably 10 hours of just footage alone, you know, that we'd film throughout the days that we were hunting. And you have to trim that down to 45 minutes or approximately 45 minutes or less, you know, just to give it some watchability on YouTube, because if it gets too much longer than that, it's really hard to keep people's attention unless it's like nonstop monster bugling bulls. And even then, sometimes I think, I know I find myself watching, videos, and even after like a while, you know, you start losing the audience a little bit, I think, even on something that's spectacular. So it was a tough hunt. We didn't have a lot of great video of big bulls coming in, up close and bugling their head off and, you know, the things that all filmmakers dream of. But we kind of wanted to show the reality of what, you know, hunting in such a place like this. This is a over-the-counter type unit, public land. At one time, in the 90s, this place was loaded with elk. Fast forward a few years to where wolves infiltrated the landscape, and the numbers have just continued to decline. And there's just not a lot of elk in this area. You know, it's not a target-rich environment. But it's one of those places that just kind of gets into your soul. You folks may understand that. You know, you may have some places that maybe you hunted with family, or you've spent time in the woods with family or friends, and it just kind of gets, you have a special spot for that place. And you want to go back every year. And no matter how many times it lets you down, you're just like, yeah, but I really love that place because you have so many fond memories of it. And anyway, that was kind of place we were at. And we got three call-ins on video. And we heard a few bulls during that week, but we had three call-ins. And we kind of show, you know, the raw and real of what it looks like, you know, trudging through the landscape. If I had to have you give me to describe in your own words, Dusty, what that landscape, I can sit here all day and tell people about it, but I, you know, from another person, because I'm kind of used to that place. I kind of spent a lot of time, in those kind of places, those kind of areas. So I have my the way I see the world to describe it, but I'd like for you to describe it in your own words, and then maybe compare and contrast to what kind of hunting and woods that you had experienced before, maybe before you start following me around. Maybe you have some regrets in that regard of following me around after going to these places. I don't know. Tell me about it. What do you think?
Yeah. First, I would say it's beautiful. I think northern place where we were was very beautiful, but very thick, like you said. What I'm used to, where I hunted a lot for bow hunting for elk is in Colorado. So as far as steepness goes, I was used to the steepness, but not the thickness. A lot of brush, and getting within 15 yards of a bull elk and still barely able to see them is quite a shocker. It's so different, and filming in that is even more difficult. It almost seems crazy at times in the places that you and I have been in. It's like, what are we doing down in here?
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then you're thinking, if we get one of these big creatures, wow, how are we going to get this thing out of here? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it definitely is fun. I like it a lot because you can get so close to them and you can move a lot more because of the thickness. And so you can get in close. We get those bugles 15 yards away, which is just, there's no other sound like that, you know? So I love it, even though it is crazy, but it also, I would say, is very dangerous, especially when it's raining.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous place to be when it's wet, for sure. So that just puts a whole nother obstacle in the way when things get wet. So it's a lot. It's a totally different way of thinking, a different way of hunting, all of that. It's definitely different.
Yeah. I like to compare it to maybe like Western Oregon, Western Washington, kind of to the rainforest areas. I will say we're fortunate that we don't have all the briars. You know, they have devil's club, they have blackberry briars, they have a lot of like pokey things that want to kill you. Yeah. In comparison to what we have, I mean, the stuff we have that is not super pokey, you know, there's no thorns to speak of, but it's a tangled mess. You have huckleberry brush that can be, you know, thigh high to ankle high, but most of it's at least waist deep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you have some that's even chest deep. And then there's a lot of different kinds of brush, you know, and then you can get in these tag alder thickets where, if you've ever seen tag alders, it's a deciduous type bush, but it grows downhill at a downward angle. And then it grows downhill, and then it kind of swoops up. And I don't know what you call it, if you'd call it a branch. They grow in big clusters, but one stalk, one branch, one little bush or tree, all whatever you would call it, it could be 12, 15 feet long. So it starts low to the ground and then kind of goes for like 5 or 10 feet and then swoops up another 4 or 5 feet. And it's a big cluster. So trying to penetrate some of that is rough. So you kind of learn, you try not to go through those unless that's your only alternative. And a lot of times, you know, the deer and elk don't like to do it on a daily basis either. A lot of times they'll have a little trail above it, or maybe there'll be one right through the middle where it kind of gets a little thinner. But you usually find these places on those north-facing slopes where there's a spring or some place where the snow will linger really long, and where the soil stays damp. Those tag alders love wet ground. You have mountain maple, which elk love the leaves off the mountain maple, or red stem maple, and those can get pretty thick and pretty tall. And then there's this yellow brush. I don't even know what you call it. Some people call it buck brush. I just call it yellow brush because in the early September it's green, but as the frost hits it, it turns kind of a bright yellow throughout the fall into October. And if you're lucky, you can get a little snow on it in late October and all the leaves will fall off. And then it's like you can see right through it, but you can't hardly shoot through it with a 338 Win Mag. It's still the branches are so thick. And then it's pretty vertical too. So, right, there's a lot of this vertical stuff to wade through. Now, you talked about the dangers. It can be dangerous when it rains. What are you talking about? Are you talking about slip and fall? Are you talking about hypothermia? Are you talking about kind of all the above?
Right. It could be all the above. I mean, you get wet within 2 feet of walking through that stuff. You're pretty much drenched in water. So that can be bad. And then, yeah, just the slipping, like you said, those alderberry bushes, is that what they're called?
Alderbrush.
Alderbrush.
You're thinking of elderberries.
Elderberries, yeah.
They have those sometimes too, and the berries are dark purple, and you can make wine out of them. And if you want to play a trick on your buddy, say, oh, these are delicious. They taste just like blueberries, and act like you eat some because they're bitter as gall. I mean, they're horrible.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
Wait, have I? Dang it. Maybe I just screwed up. I probably should have waited and fooled you before I told that little funny
Thank
secret.
Thank you for that.
I got my son Austin pretty good with that a couple times.
That's funny.
Anyway, sorry.
No. Yeah. Yeah, so very, very slippery. Stepping on those and the bear brush,
bear grass.
There it is.
That stuff.
Whoa. Yeah. I mean, you fall so fast. I mean, sometimes you just fall. You don't even know you fell.
Mm-hmm. You just look up and you're like, I'm on the ground.
Yeah, exactly.
My knee hurts.
So yeah. So very, very scary at times. Walking through that stuff. So.
And one thing, it's hard to navigate in the dark. Let's say it's like, you know, you fought your way through the brush down to the bottom of this canyon and you hunted till dark. And now you got to hike out in the dark. Well, a standard headlamp illuminates the brush that's about a foot or two in front of your face. So then you can't see the ground beneath you. So you're kind of blinded by all these leaves. So then you're kind of stumbling around. So I've always made a practice of having a headlamp and a handheld flashlight, because then I can take my handheld flashlight, hold it below my waist and scan the ground with it to make sure I'm not stepping in a hole or stepping on a slick log or on a slick something. Blowdowns are terrible there too.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful place.
It is. It's magical.
So what kind of obstacles does that create for someone trying to film a hunt in that kind of conditions, whether it's not wet or whether it's dry, you know, whether it's wet or dry?
Right. The obstacle would be, you know, if a bull is coming in, just trying to see the bull, trying to get it on camera, right? That's very difficult at times because sometimes I don't even know where he's at because I can't see him, but I know the direction he is because I can hear him. Right. So I'll just try to focus in that area and zoom in over there and hope that it grabs something, an antler or something.
Picks it up.
Yeah. Even though my own eyes can't even see through that stuff. So that is definitely very difficult and very hard. And then, of course, with all the falling and stuff, that's its own own thing. You know, you're carrying thousands of dollars worth of gear in your hand and trying not to fall or get the lens scratched up or, you know, any of that stuff. It's a different place.
Yeah. Well, I know that, like, also to keep one thing to keep in mind, once it rains, the brush stays wet. Let's say it rains one day and then it turns off beautiful the next. The brush stays wet for a couple days. And so it's like day two and you're like, oh, it's probably not going to be too bad, but it's still a slippery mess. It's still, you're soaked to the bone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
30 yards from the truck, from the waist down, or even like from your armpits down. It's definitely a unique place. And, you know, trying to keep your lens, the water droplets off the lens.
Right.
That's a full-time job. It seems like even on a pretty nice day, there's always a little drop of water that's going to get on there. It seems like, unless it's just hot and dry, you know?
Right. But, right. Yeah. And that definitely makes it more difficult, especially when it's super wet, because then eventually the little rag that you use to wipe your lens, that eventually gets wet, you know, soaked. And then you're just smearing wet all over your lens. It's not even coming off, right? So yeah, it's definitely another obstacle.
So typically when it's actively raining, we don't typically get out and run through the brush too much. We're not trying to hunt in the rain. Well, I am kind of a fair weather hunter. I'm going to admit I don't like wading through that stuff when it's coming from the bottom and the top. You know, you got it raining on your head and coming through your pants and everything. And you can wear, you know, rain gear, but even then, it's tough. It's tough because then if you may overheat in your rain gear, so then you get wet from sweat. So it's not super comfortable just because it's so difficult to walk through that brush. But so typically if it's raining pretty good, we will not hunt during that time. We don't want to ruin the camera equipment because, you know, as good as it is, you can't go out there and get it wet and then now your camera's messed up and, well, we were going to film this hunt and it's going to be nice tomorrow and, well, we ruined our camera. Great. So we kind of try to pick our battles.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
With all that in mind, as much as how beautiful and it is, and then you talk about how crazy all this other stuff is, what did I tell you about halfway through that hunt? I said, Dusty, if I ever say I want to come hunting up here, I want you to look me dead in the eye and say, you fool.
Yes.
What's wrong with you? Are you crazy? You're never going hunting there. I mean, I need the voice of reason to kind of snap me back into reality, because I do get this euphoria of like old romanticism of like, oh, it's going to be great. It's so pretty. And I've had success. And then I start like, then reality starts slapping you in the face. Like, there's no spot in stock hunting here. If the elk don't bugle, you're spun out. And with the elk being far, few and far between, you know, you can go for a couple, 3 days without hearing anything. So I'm telling you this, What did you think about that? Did you tell me that during the hunt? You know, every time I start getting that old time feeling.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. After that, as soon as you would hear a bull, right, then you'd start thinking, oh, we gotta go. This is the greatest place ever, right? Mm-hmm. All that nostalgia start coming back, and I'd have to yell at you, you know.
Yeah.
I'd have to call you a fool. reality check.
It's kind of like that meme, you know, that like every time I'd hear an elk bugle or I'd see a gigantic rub or something, then it's like you start seeing all the equations like floating around in my head. I'm like, okay, next year I can come down here. I can put a salt lick here. I could probably take a machete and hack a trail in. And I could do this, that, and the other thing. And I'd start telling Dusty this. And what would you say?
I would call you a fool.
You fool.
Then I'd have to remind you of what it's like that, You're comparing this to like a crazy ex-girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
You know, we've all had that crazy ex-girlfriend that you break up with them, you feel, okay, I'm glad that's over with. Then all of a sudden you see her again. Then you think, well, maybe she wasn't as bad as I thought. And so you start talking to her again and start engaging again. And it never ends well. It's the same thing.
It ends in heartbreak.
Heartbreak every time.
Every time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like old Ma Nature starts shaking her hiney at me. and you're like, Dirk, come on now.
Yep.
Come on. You know, it's like talking your buddy down from a ledge.
Right. Yeah. You got to have that good friend that's going to slap you in the face.
Yeah. Well, that's the kind of place it is. And it's a love-hate relationship, mm-hmm. definitely. I love it because of the nostalgia. It reminds me of good times with good friends and family. And the backdrop is beautiful. It's pretty unparalleled to a lot of other places we've been. It's just a very beautiful place. But
yeah,
I don't know, man. It's a tough place to tag a bull. It can happen, but everything's got to go just right.
Yep.
Yeah. But anyway, that's where the film takes place, and I don't want to give too much away to our listeners. I want them to go check it out. It's on the Phelps Game Calls channel. It's called Ghost Bulls of the North. It's got a kind of a cool little thumbnail of a ghost bull on the front, and check it out. It's about 45 minutes. If you like it, comment below. Tell us, you know, what'd you think. We got Sir David Attenborough to do some voiceover for us.
It was incredible.
I didn't know if we could pull it off, but he did.
He's a great guy.
Yeah. And, it's a little bit, it got a little different twist than our normal, elk hunting films, but we've had tons of really good, feedback so far. So go watch it. If you like it, comment. If you didn't like it, let me know. It seems like there's always that one person that comments and says, the music's stupid.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like the music. They'll have some little jab, you know, about the music. And we haven't got that person yet. But I was kind of poked back a little bit. I'm like, okay, if you're going to give negative feedback, please let us know what you didn't like about it. Was it too loud? Was it too often? Was it the genre? Was it, what didn't you like about the music? So if you don't like the music, let me know. If you love the music, let us know that too, because believe it or not, we're trying to refine these films as good as we can. We want the next one to be better and the next one to be better and the next one to be better. So for the editors, I edited this one. For the filmer, Dusty, you know, getting the shots, we're always just trying to refine and make this as good as it possibly can. So, and the bad part is we can't show you everything that happened. So it gives a little more context of why we do, and kind of, I guess we could have voiced over certain sections and kind of told you why things kind of play out. But sometimes I feel like that voiceover can be a little distracting too. It's like, I kind of like to just immerse myself in watching things unfold. So I don't know. Let us know if you like the voiceover telling you, you know, step by step what's going on. Or maybe you don't like that. Maybe you just like to watch it unfold and figure it out in your head. But we will kind of go over some stuff since we didn't do any voiceover on there, and kind of let you know what happened during the hunt here in a minute. But first, let's shift gears. And I just want to say, as always, if you guys have any questions regarding elk calling, elk hunting, why the Maverick diaphragm is better than the pink diaphragm that Phelps likes, you can call in to our super secret hotline. It's 208-219-7701. You have 3 minutes to leave a message. You can leave a message and tell us how cool Dusty is and what a good filmer he is. You can tell us why Jason Phelps is not a great caller.
Both of those truths.
Both of those truths. I mean, or if you have a question, you know, we'll play your, your question or your statement on the air, and we'll address it or answer your question best we can. So moving on. So tips and tactics on the three bull scenarios that we had in the film, I kind of wanted to talk about and kind of break down. The bull number one, the first bull that we had an encounter with, a good buddy of mine was camping up there. Him and his son had heard that bull the day before and bugling, and him and his son kind of walked over the hill there and kind of bugled at him a little bit. And he's like, man, I need to tell Dirk about that. So he told me, and we were kind of spun out where we were at, not having much luck. So we went over there and found the bull right away. And, you know, I feel like there's a lot of folks out there in the elk calling education world. Maybe they have a silver bullet, you know, you do this, you make this certain call every time, and it'll just make the bulls come in. You know, whether that's a bugle or a certain cow call or a estrus buzz or what have you. You know, there's a lot of phrases and names of these different calls that kind of been thrown around. But I've always been kind of a different mindset. I feel like I'm always kind of like the student of the game. I'm always trying to figure it out. I spend a lot of time elk calling every year. And for the last 35 years, I've spent a lot of time in the elk woods. And one thing I've found for me is I haven't found that one perfect call that does it all. I feel like I kind of go into it as an experiment every time. I'm having an experiment on what that bull is going to react to. And some bulls react well to like a really high-pitched, a lot of bulls react really well to a really high-pitched bugle. Some don't. Some react well if you do a lot of chuckling or grunting. Some react really well with cow calls, and they don't want to answer bugles, but they'll answer cow calls. So what I'm doing is I'm trying to find out, when I first start calling to a bull, I'm trying to figure out what he wants to reply to. So I'll try three different bugles right off the beginning as I call to him, whether I know an elk's there or not. I'll do three different bugles. My first one is just a long, high note, locator type bugle. Very non-aggressive, just a, hey, how you doing? You know, like, I'm over here, guys. You know, just a non-threatening, hey, everybody, I'm an elk, I'm over here. The next one, I ramp it up a little bit, I escalate a little bit, and I give a full bugle from the low note to the high note to the low note, and I'll throw in like three or four chuckles or grunts. But they're not going to be aggressive. I've taken it up a notch. And I wait, you know. So for after the first bugle, we may wait 5 minutes. Second bugle, wait another 5 minutes. And the third bugle I'm going to do is going to be the biggest, meanest, nastiest lip ball bugle with thunderous, ground-shaking grunts at the end. And a lip ball bugle, if you're not familiar, that's when you buzz your lips on your tube to make that real guttural bass growl sound. And then it goes to a really high note, and then it comes back off, and then lots of big thunderous grunts. And if I don't usually hear anything from those three bugles, we move on. Also, I kind of forgot to say this, between those bugles, and I may even just start out with this before I make any other vocalization, I will make a cow call. 2-3 very quiet, light cow calls to begin with. Because especially in that thick country, you don't know if there's an elk 50, 60 yards from me, right? That one time we got out of the truck and bugled, and there was a bull that answered, what, 60 yards, just right out of sight. And we almost killed that sucker. This was when I had my mouth tab. I was shooting my mouth tab. And if I'd have been shooting a normal bow, I'd have killed that sucker dead to rights. Because we were in that thick forest, and then there were some branches. I could have shot through between the branches with a little bit of squatting in my stance, but to squat and pull it back, pull the bow back with a mouth tab with your teeth, and it was just, I couldn't do it. I couldn't make the shot, so I didn't do it. But, I mean, we were really close, so you just never know. So start out with a really quiet call from the beginning just to make sure you don't have one right there. Then your next calls, my next cow calls, I'm going to escalate. I'm going to make them really loud to where if like we're at the edge of a big canyon, I want those calls to reach across several hundred yards to an animal, to a bull that's over there to get a reply. And if I don't hear nothing then, that's when I do that first locator bugle. Anyhow, when we got that bull to answer the first time, he answered one of my locator bugles. I don't even know if I even chuckled. I can't remember or grunted. You'll see on the video. But once we kind of pinpointed where he was at, we hiked in on him. And as we kind of got closer, we got about halfway to him, and it's a jungle. So I had to call again and kind of try to, all right, let's get our navigation or get our bearings here. Where's he at? And I called a couple times, and I had did like big full bugles. And he wouldn't answer. And then I cow called a little bit, and I remembered he kind of did kind of a moany type bugle. And I thought, well, maybe I'll do a moany type bugle. So I gave kind of a moany bugle. Bam, he answered. I'm like, okay, he likes the moany bugles, but he don't like those high-pitched, aggressive bugles at all. So as you watch the film unfold, you'll notice I'm not really doing too much of that real high-pitched bugling. I do kind of a grunt or a bark at the beginning, and then I give kind of a low, moany bugle. And that kind of kept us in the game with him. It kept him talking, and he stood his ground. So we got up there, got real close to him. Finally, he comes out, and we can kind of see him. And then he kind of disappears. I'm like, okay, typically when those bulls are that close and he's coming your way next time he bugles. And when he bugled again, it seemed to be a little more aggressive. So I thought, okay, it's time for me to escalate. So I escalate a little bit. So I gave him a little more than a moany bugle. He didn't like it. Away he went. So we kind of pursue him a little bit, and, I'd given him, I think, a couple, three of those big high-pitched bugles and maybe some grunts. He didn't like it. And then I went back to moany bugles, and at that point, the jig was up. So I think the takeaway on that is, you know, don't escalate too soon, especially if you get that feeling. I had kind of the gut feeling that he wasn't an aggressive bull anyway, and I should have kind of stuck with my gut on the thing. I should have just like, well, we're just going to just play this with kid gloves the whole time. But I, you know, sometimes you get a little excited, and I think I turn half elk anyway when I get in close like that. I want to bugle. I want to fight you, man. Yeah. And so I think my excitement might have got the best of me too. So if I had to play that over again, I definitely would have maybe stuck with the moany bugles right up to, you know, that's all you get. That's where I live. That's where I make, and that's what he likes. And I don't want to intimidate him. And I want him to, because I think he came in out of curiosity more than anger. He raked a little bit, but he never escalated with his voice. He never got really mad. And a lot of times they'll rake for a little bit and then they'll escalate their calls. And then pretty soon the bull will make a bugle that it's undoubtedly, he means business. He's upset. And I always go like, oh, he's mad. And usually after they make a bugle like that and I cut them off with my own bugle, similar status, then pretty soon here he comes. But he never gave that bugle. So I think he was more curious than anything. So Then we had the long walk out of there, and that place was a crap hole, wasn't it? There was blowdowns on blowdowns. There'd been like a microburst in part of that place, and you didn't get to see it all on the video, but there was down timber and brush, and it was wet. And I think I made note to Dusty. I told him at one point, I was like, you know, maybe I'm glad that we didn't get that elk, because we'd have had a heck of a time getting out of there. It wasn't super steep. It was kind of rolling. There were some steep spots, but it was so difficult to just walk on semi-flat ground.
Yeah.
It would have been bad with 100 pounds on our back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was rough.
We would have done it, though.
Oh, yeah.
I would have happily done it.
Yeah.
And after being done, we'd have been like, let's get out of here and never come back. So the bull number two, we heard from a long distance away. And Dusty, he thought he only heard one. I swore I heard two. I said, I heard just a kind of a wimpy bull, and I heard a growly bull. But I don't know. Dusty kind of looked at me, and he was like, I don't know. I don't remember hearing a growly bull. I'm like, I swear I heard it. Yeah. And then we bugled from across this big drainage. So then we got over on the same side they were on, took this old trail, hiked in on them. We bugled from the trail, and we heard a bugle. And I swear I heard a growly, just a down in there. But I don't think Dusty heard it. Yeah, he's just like, okay, Dirk, whatever. You know, I think he does that a lot. He just like, you know, Yes, Dirk. Whatever you say, sure, Dirk. He just like tries to like, you know, nod, just like, okay, whatever you think. Oh, man. Maybe I come up with this stuff in my own head. Maybe. I don't know.
Hey, whatever keeps you going.
Yeah. You know? I think he does kind of look at me with a funny look in his face when I tell him we're going to go down there. And he's like, okay. Yeah. I mean, that maybe he don't complain, but
no.
I think maybe the voice of reason is trying to come through his eyes at me, like look at me in the eye and understand this is stupid. We're not going to go down in there. Because that place we went after, that second bull, it's one of the brushiest places we've ever been in. The next drainage over, a couple years ago, we went down in that same type of stuff. And at that point, we kind of said the same things, like, this is the worst place we've ever been in. Yep. This place was worse than that, because from top to bottom, it was bad.
It was.
And we get in there, and this bull would bugle kind of off and on. And by the sounds of him, I'm just like, he don't sound like a big bull. He just kind of sounds like a raghorn 5-point. But big bulls can sound wimpy until they turn it up a notch too. So there's always that little carrot that dangles out in front of your head. It's like, well, this thing may just be a giant playing possum a little bit. So we got to go. And plus, I swear, Dusty, I swear I heard a big growler down here.
Come on.
So we get down in there, and he bugles just enough to keep us interested. Like, so we get down in there, and then the wind got a little wonky. So we're like, all right, let's sit down and take a break. So we sat there for an hour or something, had a little snacky snack, and I don't know, we might even took a nap. I don't know.
I don't know.
And then once the wind started coming uphill to us, I was like, okay, let's make our move. So then we took in after him again, and we get over on the same ridge he's on, and he just taunts us. Just like we get 100 yards, and we're like, okay, this is no time to work my magic. And then he would just move off. So then it's almost like leapfrog. We'd move up to where he was standing from the last time he bugled, and then he would be just 100 yards further. So, which this is typical elk behavior, right? And he kind of liked those moany bugles too. So you'll see in the video, I'm giving him those kind of moany bugles. I'm not giving him those beautiful prize-winning bugles that everybody likes to do and hear, right? These are just these crappy moany bugles. It's like a prepubescent boy trying to talk or something. And, you know, that kept him talking. And then a couple times, once we got up on top of that ridge, I thought, I think we'll put a little bit of pressure on him and he's going to come in. He kind of started escalating a little bit. I'm like, okay, this is going to be good. We got good wind. It's very advantageous for the bull to come in at this spot, but he's going to have to come in close to see us. We can set up, we can call. So I escalated a little bit. And he just kept on moving off. And I thought, all right, we're going to step on this thing. So sometimes I take the aggressive just a little, the next step up. It's like, I'm just going to not maybe call as much, but I'm just going to start walking right to where I think he is. So we just start walking, start hoofing it. Because a lot of times those things will shut up and then they'll just stand there and wait for you to walk up. And they're like, oh, there he is, jigs up. Well, that stupid thing wouldn't even stand his ground long enough to even catch us, you know, try to catch us sneaking in or walking in on him. So he was clearly intimidated. He didn't want to fight and he just kept moving off. So at that point, I think we ran into like a couple bull moose, bull moose. One was a giant, probably a Boone and Crockett Shiras moose. The other one was a little dinky one, like a 30 incher. The other one was a big hoss. Mm-hmm. And you filmed and tried to film. I'm like, there again, we talk about filming stuff. You think, I think I got it. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just like canvassing like the film. I'm like, I got to show these moose and they're terrible. Black and they're really hard. They don't stand out in the video at all. So
that tells you right there how a big moose like that and you still can't.
Yeah. The thing's like a horse standing there. They're so tall. And like, how can you not?
That's how bad it is.
Yeah. So we sat down for a while and just kind of let things calm down. Ate a snack, another snack. You know, that's why we take lots of snacks. Got to keep our energy up you know, I'm about to blow away in the wind. I got to
lightweight.
Yeah, I got to keep my metabolism up, you know.
Yes.
I got a carb load. Hey, we eat healthy snacks, though.
Right.
Fruit leathers and protein jerkies and sausages and stuff like that.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Right now. should have broke open some jerky. Then everybody had heard us smacking our lips.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyhow, so after we kind of let things go quiet for a while, I like to do this thing where, and I've kind of done this in the last few years a lot, where the bugling's kind of gone stale. Well, we'll just find a good spot where the wind is good and we have a good vantage point to where we can hear a lot of different directions. And we just sit in that one spot and just call. And we just start calling sparingly in the beginning, just a few cow calls. And then after a while, I introduce a bugle. It's almost like cold calling, right? And as, let's say we do this for 30 minutes. And as we get closer to that 30-minute mark, you know, we're constantly escalating. By the time we get to the 30-minute mark, I'm cow calling and I'm bugling almost every breath, right? And maybe I get up and run around or throw some sticks around or roll rocks down the hill. I want to paint this picture that there is a cow in heat. There's some kind of a rut fest melee going on up here. And a lot of times during that, sometimes you'll hear a bugle, but more times than not, once you kind of quit doing that and then you turn it off, 30-minute mark, shut it off, sit down, be quiet, shut up, put your head on a swivel. And you, after about 10, 15 minutes, pretty soon you'll hear a bull about as far away sometimes as you can hear them. And pretty soon closer. Well, we did that and we didn't hear squat. We're bugling over into that next big canyon where that growler was supposed to be.
Right.
And evidently he didn't get the memo. He's supposed to participate when he hears that sound. And so after sitting there for, I don't know, probably an hour, then we're just, okay, nothing's happening. And that bull we've been chasing all morning, he shut up too.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, let's get out of here. So then you have to do that terrible walk of shame out of there. And it's, you know, he talked about it before. It's brushy and steep and yucky and it's hot. And by that time, you know, of course it's warmed up and now we have the sun on the hillside wearing too many clothes. And it's fun.
It
builds character what it does. You know, and if it wasn't for all the beautiful fall colors, you know, you may not, you know, appreciate it as much.
Yeah.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Anyhow, that was kind of the strategy on that bull, is like, try not to work him up too hard, too quick. Just kind of not be super aggressive until it became advantageous. We got out of that thick brush hole. He did, I guess I'll back up. He did come into probably 10 yards, 15 yards, maybe. I seen antler tips, but he kind of came in quiet and I heard him rubbing. And then I'm like, oh, Dusty. And then I called and he didn't come out. I'm like, all right, let's move up. So we moved up there and we were, I don't know, 10 yards maybe. And I seen an antler tip. I don't think Dusty could see it just from where I was standing. I kind of seen, it looked like maybe a 5-point just by the splits on his antlers. And then he moved off, of course. And then we, you know, followed suit after that. But my advice is, I mean, you don't want to give up too quick. We could have, like, when he moved off then, maybe the smart play would have been, all right, let's pack it up, just get out of here and go find one that does want to play better. Right. But there's been times where if you just give them that little nudge, pretty soon curiosity gets the best of them, or maybe you fool them into getting mad. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost like on the playground when there's a kid you want to start a fight with and you just start poking them a little bit and poking them, just these little nudges. And finally, you break that barrier. It's like, all right, I've had enough.
Yep.
And I was kind of hoping we would get that, but yeah, that guy was a rock. He was an oak. He was an oak. He wasn't going to lose his temper.
Grunt. Yeah. He left.
He probably listens to a lot of Jocko Willink, you know, and not loosening his temper, you know, ego's the enemy, right guys?
Right.
Yeah. You know? And he knew, you know, I'm not that tough.
Yeah.
I don't need a fight. I got nothing to prove here.
Exactly. Good.
Good. The elk doesn't want to fight. Good.
Good.
Find another one.
Exactly.
And then the third bull that we got on. One thing I will mention is this hunt, mid-hunt, I got news from home that my wife, Jessica, was in the hospital. She has appendicitis. And I'm like, oh, appendicitis. I know people that had that. That's not a big deal. I mean, they just do a couple little poke incisions and they fix you up and you're out and it's not a big deal. I know two or three people and they act like, oh yeah, it's nothing. They were back to work within a day.
Right.
Well, no, she had to get a major surgery. They had to cut her way open. They had to dig in. They had to remove some intestine. They had to stitch it back together. It was a very, very major ordeal. And we had to cut the hunt short. I'm like, okay, we got one more half day to hunt. We can hunt till noon and then we got to get out of here. So, cause she didn't, my kids were down there and then her friends were there. But I needed to get back home, as quick as I could. So I'm like, all right, after this hunt, this half day, we got to get home.
Yep.
So the night before that half day, we'd called down into this really steep, nasty, like almost vertical. Like you could see 800 vertical feet straight down. And you could have probably thrown a baseball straight out and it would have hit the bottom. It was like, it was that vertical. And across the draw on the other hillside, bull answers. And as a 5-point, he started coming across and he was going to climb that hill to us. I'm like, oh, if that sucker climbs this hill, I'm going to shoot him right here. But there again, we didn't get anything good on video because he was a long ways away. We don't have all these big telescopic lenses because we're in brush country USA. So we don't have these big zoom lenses to zoom in and see the bulls. Yeah. So there wasn't really much to show there. So we left that part out. But so the next morning we have this half day. I'm like, we got to get back in there. That thing was pretty hot. Yeah. We'll just slip over there and get him to talk and we'll pinpoint him. And then we'll go down that ridge, walk down there, shoot him, pack him out. It's not that far of a pack. Yeah. We'll be out of here at noon.
Easy.
Well, the next morning we get there, that bull would not make a peep.
Nope.
I think he smelled us that night. I think he must've smelled us or something. And he, fool me once, he ain't going to be fooled twice. Elk are smart. So we stood there for quite a while calling. And then I pulled out my external call, the external open reed cow call. And I always say those things like 10% of the time they work every time. and I start blowing on it. My brother always makes fun of me. He's like, God, that thing does not sound like an elk. That sounds terrible. It sounds like a weird bird or something. Like, I know, but sometimes bulls like it for whatever reason. Maybe I sound like old Mary Lou from last year. Mary Lou, she's pretty.
Yeah.
Crazy ex-girlfriend. Yeah. See, elk have crazy ex-girlfriends too sometimes.
Exactly.
She wants child support. But anyway, I blew on that thing and bam, we got an answer. And then I'm like, Dusty, that's a big bull. That's not that little one. Mm-hmm. So we make a quick plan. We throw our packs on, hike out this ridge. I'm like, oh yeah, he's just right on that ridge. It just sounds like he's just right over the roll of that ridge.
Yeah.
We get down there, we set up, we start calling, nothing. Like, man, he's just like got to be right here. Nothing. He didn't bugle anymore. I'm like, man, well, we've walked this far. Let's walk a little bit further and bugle over this next little backside of this little ridge here and see if we can get a little better bird's eye on him. So we get over there, boom, he answers. He's not on the ridge we're on. He's across this big drainage on the other side of this canyon. Well, from our elevated position where we were calling, we could hear that bull from that other side of that other drainage, and the sound was traveling straight across that big ridge that we were standing on up to us up high. So we had this depth perception issue. Like, we thought he was on the ridge when he was another 500 yards or further, 600 yards, as the crow flies on the other side of this other drainage. So anyway, we get down there. I'm like, man, the clock is ticking. Mm-hmm. So we get down there and we do a bunch of calling. And it seemed like I kind of pinpointed him. And then about the time we get him pinpointed, he just shuts up. And I'm like, well, at this point, I'm feeling pretty low. It's just like, man, we're not getting an elk. Stupid place. Dusty, What did I tell you to tell me? What are you supposed to be saying to me right now?
You fool.
Yes. I felt like a fool. Yeah. Like, man, I have just, why do I come back to this place? This is dumb. I'm wasting my time and spinning my wheels. You know, I have that, all those doubts, you know, this is, I'm a fraud. I'm a fake. This doesn't work. What am I doing? So we, back to the snacks. We open some snacks. And snacks always kind of make you feel a little better, you know, get a little bit of sugar in you. Those organic mangoes, you know, you get at Costco. Those things are so good. I ate a bunch. I'm like, I'm going to eat all of them.
Yeah.
Because this is.
You were pretty upset.
Yeah. I was eating away my emotions. Yes. Eating my emotions.
You were.
It's a good thing we didn't have any beer. Probably got hammered.
I have to carry you out of there.
Yeah.
Dusty, I need help here. Carry my bow and my pack.
But so then I got, so I was sad and then I got pissed off. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to do my rut melee thing again. I'm just going to do my whole, you know, start out low, just, and then just go crazy. Just do all these crazy bugles, just the nastiest lip ball, like almost every breath I was lip balling. And then I had that open reed and I was blowing on that thing and I was making up stuff. It was like, these quivery, God awful calls. Like if any human would have heard that, there'd have been like, good God. Yeah. Who is down there? What are they doing? That sounds terrible. My brother would have got up and left. He would have just shook his head and like, I'm out of here. You're a fool. He had a double fool.
Double fool, yeah.
And I thought, this will get that bull to bugle. And before that, he would bugle every now and then, but not much. Because he was bedded across this hillside, you know. And we're approaching the midday hour, the 12 o'clock midday madness hour.
Right.
And I escalated to the crescendo and then I stopped and I was like, ta-da. And he didn't bugle. Actually, he went completely radio silent on us.
Yeah.
So I wish Dusty could have been like taken like 8 different angles of me doing that, because you guys probably would have been like,
oh yeah.
But I think at that point, Dusty's just like, hurry up, get it over with. This is not going to happen. Hurry up. We got to go. And so I clammed up. I just clammed it up, which you're supposed to do. We sat there for, I don't know, 15 minutes. And then all of a sudden, bam, he answers. He bugles. And it's not just the old moany bed bugle. It was a... It's a pretty good, mature, growly sounding bugle. Almost sounded like a planer, like a wood planer. When you put a freaking 2x4 in the old planer and it goes, and it makes that really gnarly sound. It's almost like that level. And I'm like, I look at Dusty, I'm like, we got him.
Yeah.
Do I call? No, do not call. And then pretty soon, he went 15 minutes without calling, and then he bugled. And then 30 seconds later, bugles again. Pretty soon he bugles again. He's like, hey, what happened over there? They sounded like a party. Now there's no party. Where'd everybody go? I think I might want to go to the party.
Yeah.
So I let him bugle 3 or 4 times on his own. And then I started calling again. But I didn't go right to the bugle. When he bugled, when I said, okay, I'm going to start answering now, I start giving him these cow calls, and the best way to describe them is kind of a longing type cow call, like meh, like really high pitched, long, but then draw it down slow. Like, hey, like I'm talking directly to you, not this jerk. I'm talking to you. Come over here and save us. This guy's kind of a jerk. His horns aren't very big. I want you to come over because you sound pretty hot. That's what I'm trying to tell this bull. And when I would do that, he would answer. And then I would bugle. So he hadn't moved. He had not moved the whole time we were there. And as soon as I started doing that, the next thing you knew, he had moved from his original bedding spot halfway down the hill to the creek, which was probably a few hundred yards, you know. Pretty soon, he bugles again. He's in the creek. I'm like, we got him, Dusty. We got him. So now we have to move. Like, he knows exactly. Elk have radar. They have OnX maps built into their brain and their ears. So I'm like, we got to move over here and get ready to waylay him unexpectedly when he climbs up the hill. He'll be just walking up the hill right to where he last heard us, and we're going to get him. Well, he got to that creek. I don't know if he laid in it or took a extra long drink, if he had to poop. I don't know what happened, but he stood down there forever. It seemed like forever.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm starting to get worried. I'm like, where is he? So finally I'm like, okay. So I made some cow calls and then a bugle, and he answers. I'm like, okay. He's right there. And then he climbs up, and then he bugles again at like 60 yards. But off to our left, not where we anticipated. Typically on these situations I have, they'll come in on a straight line right to me. If they're going to come all the way across that hill, they're not going to do no circling nonsense. They're going to come in on a straight line. I've had this happen a lot. They just come in on a straight line. So I'm expecting him to come in on a straight line. Well, he came off that straight line, and he was off to our left about 60 yards. And we can't see him. It was just, I don't know how we couldn't see him. It was just like, it was right there.
Right.
And I'm like, oh yeah. Well, he's going to walk across that little tiny opening and I'm going to zing him. We wait there. We sit there. Nothing. And on the film, you see this, and it all happens very fast. Right. But I cut out, you know, an hour of us standing there on one foot, like waiting for something to happen. And the flies buzzing around, you know, you can hear bees and flies and birds flying over. But I cut all of that out. So it speeds up the process to make this video watchable and short. But anyway, I'm like, I don't know what happened. And then next I'm like, I think the jig's up, Dusty, I think. And then right up to where we had our rut fest party, where we had the cow party, where people were, these elk were rut drunk. They were running around. They were cannonballing into the water. They were doing all sorts of crazy stuff. Yeah. They were saying some stuff that can never be repeated. He was standing right up there by our packs.
Yeah.
And he barks at us.
Yep.
And starts chuckling. Mind you, this is directly upwind.
Right.
Downwind. Yeah. I keep on saying it wrong. He was directly downwind up the hill, but downwind because all the thermals are blowing uphill. So he's downwind of us uphill, and he's barking and chuckling. I'm like, well, he's chuckling. It's just not barking. So maybe there's a chance. So I go into bark chuckle mode. So I start copycatting, bark chuckle. And a lot of times the bulls come in and they think something's amiss, or they want to see that other bull. They will bark like, hey, show yourself. So I start barking and chuckling. I'm like, well, maybe he's never smelt people before. I don't know. It don't make any sense to me. But at this point, we're in overtime. We're the sudden death overtime.
Yeah.
So I bark, chuckle. He barks and chuckles back and forth. We run up the hill, get up there. And I'm just like, okay, there's no way that he's going to just bark and chuckle and run off. So I make a beeline. I'm walking, and I look up, and there that sucker is standing there looking at me. Dusty, he's not right behind me, so he don't see him with the camera. Right. But he does see him kind of escaping. You get a little shot of him escaping through the shadows of this tree. Mm-hmm. And I don't even have my tube in my hand. I just start, because I've drawn my bow. As soon as I see him, I stop, I knock an arrow, and draw my bow, and I start barking with just my diaphragm in my mouth. I'm like, whoa. I just start barking, and finally he just stops, and I've got this little tiny kind of window to the trees there. I'm like, okay, how far is he? I think he's like 45, maybe 40. I don't know. So I put my 40 pin right in the middle of that. I'm like, I can see his shoulder right there. I'm like, all right, I send it. It cuts off a branch and the arrow disappears. And then the next thing you know, I see the bull run off. I'm like, did I get him? Yeah. I think I got him. And then he barks at us and chuckles again. Like, I'm pretty sure I didn't get him. So we continue this cat and mouse game of barking and chuckling and advancing. And I would bark and chuckle. He'd bark and chuckle. And I'd run up, you know, as fast as a fat kid can up that steep hill. And it didn't look that steep on the hill on the video, but it's steep as the back of your head. Mm-hmm. So we're running up the hill as fast as we can, panting, out of breath. And every time I hit a flat spot, he would be standing there waiting. and I would catch him like turning and running because he didn't get a good look at us. He would just hear us coming and he would turn.
Yeah.
And they would run off to the next spot about 60, 80 yards and bark and chuckle. So we did this leapfrog thing up the hill. And finally, the last time I seen him, you can on the video, you see just a little flash of him disappearing. I'm like, well, the jig is up. So we sit there and man, it's time for the real pity party now. Right. It's like, dude, it's not the biggest bull I've ever seen in an over-the-counter unit. But it's probably the biggest bull on over-counter unit I've seen in 20 years. I don't want to throw crazy numbers around, but he was a very, very big mature bull, especially for that country. Usually don't see him that big. So anyway, I have my pity party. I talk about it a little bit and then let's go check the arrow. You know, maybe I've heard bulls bugle that have got hit before. We gotta be 100% sure. We go down there, look around. There's the arrow. And as I reach down to get the arrow, he insults our injury by barking and chuckling at us again. And it was like he left and then he came back and stood right where we were standing the last time when we turned around.
Yeah.
So I pick up the arrow. I'm like, well, there's no blood on it. It's clean as a whistle. So I put it away. Dusty, what do we do? Like, I guess we run back up there and see if we can And the whole time, I don't understand this.
No.
The wind is blowing straight to him. I've never had this happen before. It defies every law of nature and everything that anybody's ever told you. If I had somebody tell me this story, I'd call bullshit. You know, I would be just like, no, that didn't happen. Okay. All right. Okay. That's what happened. You know, Dusty's my witness.
I was there.
And we go right back up to the same spot. And we kind of did that same cat and mouse thing. And he didn't linger that long that time. He kind of just disappeared and quit talking. So at that point, we were very sad. And we had to walk back down the hill. We had to drop down probably 300 feet, maybe back down to the packs again, get our packs, and then make that long walk out. And it was a nice day though. It was beautiful. Nice. It was really clear. It was probably about 80 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. So it was a really good day to trudge through that brush the way back up to the truck. You know, it was a nasty climb, but, and on the way out, what did I say? I'm like, Dusty, right here, I can start putting some trail cameras. I've got an idea. I could probably hack a little trail over here. I could put some trail cameras right there. And what did you say?
You fool.
you know, old Ma Nature, she just shook her tail at me again, shook her old tail feathers at me again.
Good.
And I was like, I was hooked. I was 100% all in coming back next year. I'm like, oh, you don't get away with it.
Yep. That's all you talked about all the way home.
All the way home.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was trying to convince you. It's just like a good buddy that tries to legitimize or you know, talk sense to you and make you not feel like he's an idiot for running back to some crazy girl.
Right. That was a nice bull though.
Yeah.
That was a nice bull.
It still hurts. So basically the title of the film is Ghost Bulls of the North, because these bulls, they're like ghosts. If you were to walk up there and look for tracks, you wouldn't see any tracks. And if you're not down in the crap hole, where their antlers are rubbing their antlers on trees and stuff, you would swear there's not a single elk around. There's not a lot of elk around. They're very few and far between. But if you figure out where they're at, it can be amazing. But they're like ghosts.
Yeah.
Like some people don't believe in ghosts. I took my brother-in-law up there one summer scouting and he's like, there's no elk here. There's no way I'm hunting here. I'm like, there's elk here. He's like, I'm not hunting here. I'm never hunting here. I couldn't talk him into it.
Oh, wow.
This was several years ago when it was better. When it was even better than it is now. This is before it's kind of like got to where it is now. It's like,
oh, man.
Ah.
That's funny.
So, But they're like ghosts. I had one person one time tell me, he called them vampires because he's like, once they shed their velvet, they're like a vampire. He's like, they do not show themselves in the light of day until they start rutting a bit. And then they come out and rut around until that's done. And then they just disappear again. And just
amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
it is. That's a great way to say it.
Yeah.
So what's your takeaways, Dusty, from the film? Do you recommend it? Do you wish that, what's your takeaways from the film? Will people like it?
I think so. I think they would like it. I think it's a good film. I think it's entertaining. I think it holds your attention the whole time. And, it shows the reality of what most elk hunting is like. Yeah. You get close encounters and then nothing. And then close encounter and then nothing. It's an uphill, downhill battle, just like hiking those hills. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great film.
Yeah. And I think it just, you know, it just shows that every season can't be a 10.
Right.
I've had some 10s up there. Yeah. I've had some zeros up there. That was kind of a zero. I didn't notch a tag, but it was fun. We learned a lot of stuff. Again, you know, we got into some new places I'd never hiked in before. And we hit some of the old spots, some of my old favorite spots that didn't have a dang thing. We hiked in behind this gated road for, felt like hours one day. We hiked and hiked and it was warm. We hiked in, for like noon. We're going to get up in there and be ready for the evening hunt. Mm-hmm. Just stack them up. And we get up there. And it looked like there had never been an elk in there in the last 10 years. Yeah. There was just ghost town. No fresh scat. There was some old white scat from like last year. Mm. No rubs, no tracks. Yeah. And it wasn't that many years ago that every year, any day of, the last part of September, you could hear a bull in there, if not kill one. The landscape changes every year. So that's another big takeaway. You know, if you have your favorite places, no matter where you're at, no matter what state, no matter what kind of place it is, you know, from year to year, it changes. A lot of times it depends on snowpack. It depends on the moisture you get in the summer. Elk are just in different places. They're not always in those spots. So you have to be willing to branch out and try other places. Try different tactics. And another thing is you just can't give up. Easy to get up, give up at that point when the cards are down. But you just have to have that faith. You have to ride that leap of faith or have that little faith. It's like, this will happen.
Yep.
Cause I know it'll happen because I've been there before. Mm-hmm. I've had success before doing these same things in these similar type places, and it's going to happen. And you just have to hold that faith, because if you don't, if you give up and go home, you lose.
Yeah.
If you stay, there's still a chance to win.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
Well, are you you ready to go back there this year?
You fool!
I kind of knew that was coming. But Dusty, hear me out. I'm going to put some trail cameras up there, and
I'm sure you are.
I have some sitting up there. I put them. Last summer I went up and I put trail cams out again.
You did.
They're still there. Like, I'm going to go this summer, go pull the cards and devise a plan. And we're going to be back in there again. And then this time it's going to be different. She's going to love me forever this time.
You are a fool.
Thanks for coming on, Dusty. Always enjoy your company and
thank
conversation.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you. It was fun reminiscing again on those hunts. Even though it didn't get one, it was it's a blast. Much fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Where can people find you on the socials and the interwebs? And
Instagram is DOF Productions. DOF Productions. And then same website, it's dofproductions.com. And I'm also on Facebook, but it's just under my name, Dusty Roop. So
all right.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. And go give him a follow. I keep telling Dusty, I'm like, you're creative. You've got the juices. You need to make some cool cool reels. Mm. That's the new thing. That's the new cool reels. Thing on Instagram reels. You know, they're trying to compete with TikTok.
Right.
And,
you just need to get myself out there.
Get yourself out there with some of those reels.
I know.
If anybody needs a camera guy, when I'm not using him, hit him up. He definitely like to follow you around the elk woods, deer woods, fishing woods. Or maybe you're a small business and need a little bit of help, you know, doing some cool film to promote your stuff. I mean, Dusty's the man.
Let me know. We can talk.
Yeah. But, thanks again. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll catch you on the next episode. And remember, monsters are coming. I always say that. Mm. That keeps us going on to those next ghost bulls. Yeah. There's a monster coming.
So. Okay.
All right.
I'm ready.
Thanks.
Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.